Hey guys, welcome to episode 76 of the podcast with very special guest Jane Espenson. This is a re-recording of the intro because apparently there was a huge microphone snafu when I recorded the intro the first time around. So if you somehow ended up listening to the first intro, I hope that this is a much better version. If you are listening to this intro for the first time, I can assure you that the previous intro sounded like I was trapped like inside of a mattress that was also in a large cave. So hoping for an improvement on that. I'm thrilled that Jane did the podcast. I thought it was a really, really fun, entertaining discussion. She's so, so talented. Please check out her new web series, Husbands. She is also writing on Once and has done many, many things that I'm sure those of you who are familiar with her work are huge fans of. If this is your first time listening to the podcast and you are coming here thanks to your interest in Jane, I want to welcome you. Let me get into some shout outs. I want to thank Andrew H. for sending me his photography book. It was lovely. I want to thank Kanji, Leanne, Kevin, and Benjamin on Twitter. I want to thank Kayla, who came up with a JV Club hand sign. You can see the image of it on the Facebook JV Club page. It's adorable. Kayla, you're the best. Nita, thanks for your tweet and obviously for helping me with the JV Club Tumblr page. On Facebook, I also want to thank Elizabeth, Brian, Rick, Oz, and Kimberly. I want to acknowledge that Tammy put a really cool posting up on the Facebook page for Bitch Magazine's Kickstarter campaign for the Disability Anthology. Please check that out if you have an interest in that. And even if you don't, you could get an interest in that because we are talking about voices that need to be heard and acknowledged. Very empowering and very cool project that's going on with that. I want to thank Holly for her friendly say hi appreciation and that she also discovered a kindred spirit in Hannah G, and I can attest that Hannah G is a wonderful friend and fan of the JV Club fan club. Really? Listen, guys, I don't have a fan club. I'm going to be honest with you right now. And then I want to thank Deborah / Shmoo for her story about one of her run-ins with the law in her adolescence. And thanks for acknowledging that. Those embarrassing stories really stay with us. Okay, guys. So if that sounded stilted at all, it's because I already recorded that intro once. But I'm hoping that this time around, it's going to sound a little bit less like my mouth is full of cotton and that I am underwater in some sort of a submarine. So thanks again, and please enjoy this episode with Jane.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I'm jumping into the podcast pool. I want to apologize for all of the dog hair that I feel certain is on your microphone as well.
There's
no escaping it.
Dog hair on the microphone.
I think because I adopted this new dog, and I think I thought that I was used to the amount that this dog sheds, and I thought this dog is so much fluffier than the other dog. Mm-hmm. How can she possibly shed more? Worlds apart.
That's why she's not fluffy. Because she's getting rid of the hair all the time.
She knows how to get rid of it. She's a fluff purger. She is so sheddy that I don't know. I'm starting to understand like when people freak out and start making sweaters out of their animals' hair and stuff.
Right.
I'm starting to feel like
maybe there's a way to have her laminated, not enough to hurt her. Just a sleek plastic covering.
Interesting. A sleeve. A dog sleeve.
A slip cover.
I just need a dog sleeve. Yeah. Jane, you've come in here, you've been here 30 seconds, you've already solved all my dog woes. Thank you so much for doing the podcast. You don't know me from Adam.
I'm pretty sure you're not Adam.
Is that a biblical term, by the way?
Yes.
It is.
Yeah, that is the Adam.
Who came up with it and what does it really mean? I mean, I feel like we know what it means.
Right.
Why
it means that and where it started, I don't know, but it feels pretty old to me and certainly biblical.
I wouldn't know you from Adam. I wouldn't know you from Cain.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you apart from someone else I also don't know.
Correct.
To me.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And now we're going to... Did you already bust open your sparkling water?
I did, so I wouldn't make that embarrassing noise that yours just made.
Listeners, I've already warned Jane that sometimes
minor belches happen because of drinking sparkly beverages. So everyone knows, everyone's been warned, you've been warned.
Blame it on the dogs.
I can certainly blame it on the dogs. I had to warn. I've issued so many warnings since you got here. I had to warn you about Whitley, the other dog, is in a crate and may or may not explode with scary sounds at any moment. I mean, the sky's the limit.
I'm prepared.
Are you? Because I feel like you should be wearing some sort of special suit or something for everything I've said.
I've had myself laminated. That's where I got the idea.
Oh, you are. You know what? I guess you do have a certain sheen to you, a certain sheen. Well, I don't know. I know that my expectation is not that you have in any way listened to my podcast, but what I tend to lean towards, which I think I told you in an email, is just kind of getting down into the nitty-gritty of what your adolescence was like and kind of how it informed what you're doing now and just what that whole experience was like. I don't know how much you've talked about that in interviews. In interviews I've read with you, people just like to pick your brain about, because there's such a huge fandom around the shows that you work on that it feels like that's what people want.
I've been really fortunate to work on some great shows, including now Husbands and Once Upon a Time, and in the past, Buffy and Battlestar Galactica and some others. Yeah, there's a story that I tell that's one of my stock stories, because you end up accumulating those over a lifetime, is about how I tried to write a MASH spec script when I was 12 or 13.
I did read about that.
Yeah, and that's sort of my one adolescent story of like reading an article about freelancers writing episodes and going like, oh, okay, well, that's clearly what I'm going to do with my life, and sitting down and writing a spec episode of MASH, which was fairly awful and I cannot find, and I never sent anywhere.
I have a Seinfeld script like that from when I was in college. And
college, I don't know where mine is. Presumably was better than my 12-year-old squirreling.
It might be. It might be, but I can't, I don't know if that's even true. But here's what, and I have read that, but what I haven't read is, like, so when you saw that, had you thought about that before? Because the way you just presented that to me made it sound like you hadn't even really thought about writing a script for television, and then you just suddenly read that and thought, wait a minute.
I knew that I wanted to make up stories for television, and
that's specific.
Yeah.
Opposed to film or...
Yeah, no, never was a movie person.
Interesting.
I was a huge fan of all kinds of television growing up. It was the 70s. It was the era of... It was a blending of eras, or at least in my mind it is. It was the tail end of the shows like The Odd Couple and... Mary Tyler Moore was in its heyday, and Bob Newhart's show, but there were, and Bridget Loves Bernie, there were a lot of these sort of almost single camera feeling kind of New York based shows. And then you started getting the really bright, colorful Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, Gary Marshall kinds of shows, Welcome Back Cotter, Love Boat, the Aaron Spelling era. And so it was sort of like these really great shows like Barney Miller and Odd Couple that felt like one act plays.
Oh yeah,
that were presented every week.
They felt like you were sort of seeing all the characters go to their New York shrink in a way.
Exactly, there was something very, very grown up about them. There were never kids in them, and then we started getting the much more kid centric, brightly colored stuff of the later 70s. And they both appealed to me. So it's sort of like I was watching great shows, and I was watching sort of kind of schlocky shows, but with often really sharp jokes in them. And sort of going like, well, those are the stories I want to tell myself when I fall asleep at night. I was a huge fan of Soap, which sort of came in and changed everything.
Sure, yeah.
Maude, All in the Family, all these shows that were very, very political, and shows that were just fun. And sort of the shows with really well-defined characters, like I remember that Barney Miller was one where I would fall asleep going, and it was always the sort of awful Mary Sue kind of storytelling of like, what if I had some sort of problem? I had to go to the 13th precinct, and then I would talk to Wojciechowicz, and then Detective Harris would come by, and he would say this kind of joke, and then Detective Yamano would be chirping in like this. And it was sort of like trying to, and it was the shows where you knew when it was, those were shows where only one character would be able to say any one line. Like it was so specific, and that fascinated me. So when I read that people were sending in spec scripts to MASH, that was just like, oh, Yes, this is the article I've been waiting to read.
Like, right, right. This is the article that was meant for me, and everyone else is the detritus that is maybe looking at it, but this is really meant for me.
Yeah, because I just...
So great.
I don't know how conscious my desire was to become a TV writer, but I certainly knew that I thought it was, those were all people who grew up in LA, grew up in the business and had connections. And so to sort of read that, like, oh, wait, people mail scripts in?
Yeah.
I don't know that I understood the agent that's between the sending and the getting of the script, but... It suddenly seemed very possible.
I'm so there's so much that that came up for me when you were saying all of that. Not the least of which is, and by the way, with certain people, I'm super self-conscious that I'm just asking the same questions they've been asked a million times. And then with other people, no matter how many interviews they've done, I'm just brazenly confident that this is going to be like the one interview they remember forever because it was so out of the box. But I also hate those interviews when you like read something and something's like, if you were a cereal.
Right,
having said that, we're totally going to play a game of MASH, not MASH the show, but MASH the game.
Sure.
Where I'm not above asking you what kind of cereal it would be. We're gonna call that the game at the end. Cool. But boy, disclaimer nation. is this idea that you were that young and that you had an awareness of the artifice of what you were seeing? Because I was consumed. I think I had a sense that they were actors, because I know that like I could separate my famous story that I've told, maybe not on this podcast, but in life, because it's one of my most embarrassing stories. My version of that, my sort of like mirror image opposite version of that, is that when I was quite young, younger than that, somehow I became fixated on John Larroquette's character on Night Court. And
perfectly healthy for a TV writer.
I mean, and I would... But the reruns came on too late. It was past my bedtime, so I would sneak out into the den. My dad would be watching something in the back room, and I would sneak out into the den and try to avoid being heard and turn the television on with the volume down just long enough so that I could see what color of suit and tie he was wearing. And then Jane, I shit you not, I would run back into my bedroom and write it on my calendar.
I had on my calendar,
maroon, you know, gray suit, maroon tie. Next day, navy suit, pink tie. Next day,
I so get that. I was that same kid. Only what I did was after school, every day there'd be an episode or maybe it was two episodes of the Adam West Batman. And I was obsessed with it. And I was convinced that my best friend was just as obsessed. We watched it every day. And Margaret Foss was my best friend growing up, and we would watch the show. And when she went out of town for 2 weeks, she was like, she her family, and she went on vacation. I wrote down everything that happened.
Great.
All the episodes when she was out of town, because I knew she would care. And she came back, and I was like, okay, day one. It was an episode with Catwoman. And she was like, why are you doing this? I'm like, well, these are what you meant. That I've got everything that happened. I've got it outlined.
Yeah.
And she's like, I really don't care.
Oh, that's precious.
I don't need to hear this.
Oh, my God. Well, that was the other question I was going to ask is, you know, how much time did you spend alone? You sort of answered that for me, that you had a friend that you would do that stuff with, because I think a lot of people that I talk to, a lot of my friends who really immerse themselves either in the kind of escapism of television as a young child, or maybe even, you know, writer friends of mine who were just did become kind of obsessed with both escaping, but also being somewhat removed and being able to kind of think of story ideas and stuff, were kind of, you know, had some lonely periods in their lives or what have you. So what was you're from Iowa, right? What was your kind of familial structure like? And
I'm an only child.
Me too.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful for aspiring writers, because you need alone time, quiet time to think.
Yeah.
My dad's a professor. My mom...
What did he teach?
Chemistry, inorganic chemistry. And my mom did various jobs in personnel departments and things like... She was a personnel director at various places around town. And so I had a lot of alone time. I wasn't a latchkey kid exactly. Like, I didn't have to, like, go home and cook myself dinner and put myself
to bed. Right.
But I came home, you know, and school was done at 3:30, and I was there till 5:30 when they got home, kind of thing. And so, I mean, that's a little bit of alone time. But
I think that's a latchkey kid, right? I mean, you're like around the corner from like a neglected orphan if you're having to go all the way through, like your parents get home at 9.
Right.
I think that time is, I had that too, where I was just going to be going home with my own key and taking care of myself for a while.
Yeah. And, maybe Margaret and I would play after school. maybe not, like, mostly I was alone those afternoons. And TV time, sometimes there were shows my mom and I would watch together, and a few shows I would watch with my dad that would be sort of like Mannix and Cannon and Columbo kind of detective-y shows.
Columbo is pure gold.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Special.
So amazing.
Just to call that out.
My mom and I loved the sitcoms. But mostly my memories of watching TV as a kid were like I would be watching it alone. And sort of those, that. But I never felt lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had a lot of time. I also spent a lot of time reading. Sometimes I look back and I think,
that was
like,
my next question.
Yeah. I bet half the books that I've read in my life I read before I was 16.
Same. Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. Especially, like, there were books that I had. There are books that I come back to that were books that were intended for younger readers. And then there are books that I was reading. Like, my dad started me on Ray Bradbury when I was so young.
Yeah.
I didn't even really know what I was reading, but right. I knew it was special and strange and
try reading
wondrous.
Ray Bradbury when you're from Iowa, because there are all these stories about Iowa.
Oh, yeah, yeah. For sure. Yeah. Dandelion Wine takes place in Illinois.
There's tons of Iowa.
But yeah, mysterious things happen in Iowa. Yeah. You're completely right.
Also, Captain Kirk's from Iowa. Iowa is like the nexus of sci-fi.
Why is that, do you think? Crop circles?
That's
the best I can offer up.
All I can think of is that there just happened to be writers who either had a personal connection to it or had spent some time there. Maybe it just is a place that breeds sci-fi writers. I made Riley, the character of Riley on Buffy from Iowa, just because I needed to really quickly write a scene where he talked about Thanksgiving back home. And it's like, well, I could research something or I could just write about what Thanksgiving's like in Iowa. It just seems quicker and easier.
Well, and isn't that's the state in The Music Man also. And
right.
They sort of are very tongue-in-cheek about it, right?
Yeah.
It's that idea of... you haven't been anywhere bland until you've been to Iowa, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's your sort of prototypical middle of the road, middle of the country kind of state. And it's actually a fascinating state.
I've never been. Not surprising, but...
yeah, it sort of was always a blue state. Now it's a red state. It's right in the middle. It's the southern part of the state is sort of southern culture. The northern part of the state is northern plains culture. The western
what does
part
that mean?
Like
what does northern plains culture mean?
Much more sort of like the... more liberal, more sort of, I don't know, Wisconsin-y.
Okay.
And then the bottom part is more Missouri-ish.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's sort of, and the west part is kind of like Nebraska. And it's just sort of, it sort of feels like it's this, if you threw it out at the United States, it's where it would hit. And it's where we were always told growing up that that's where the Anchorman sort of received pronunciation, the Anchorman pronunciation is the Iowa
interesting
accent, that it's because it's the
yeah
least
wait aren't there aren't there tests that are issued? Guess what? Guess who needs to turn off her cell phone? Not Jane. Jane with a T. The Iowa tests are issued, right? The assessment tests or whatever. So I imagine you must have been a good student.
I loved school. I was a very good student. Loved that. Loved. I would always, I'd get really stressed out every summer because it would be like, I was convinced that I'd come back in the fall and this year I'd be with fifth graders and they would know a bunch of stuff I didn't know. And every year my parents had to explain, no, these are the same kids. Same idiots you went to school with last year are going to be there this year. It's not like you're going to move into a new class of older people. But that never.
That's so amazing. And was it the kind of, was it that sort of the feeder schools that fed into all this? So like, because in Tucson, where I'm from, you could go to a magnet school where, you know, I would be bussed way out. Like I'd have to take one bus, transfer at one school, then take another bus to my school and be surrounded by a bunch of different people. And then the next school my parents chose for me or that I chose would be completely different. And I would meet some of those people, but then a whole new group of people. And that kind of continued. So I went to school with one person first through 12th. One person. Everybody else was picked up along the way or brand new.
We all went to the school.
So
it was, I mean,
went to the school.
There was one high school, two junior highs, and I don't know, maybe a dozen elementary schools. So every grade I went into, it was all the kids that I knew plus new ones.
Yeah.
Everyone, all the kids I knew plus new ones. And then high school, they stopped adding new ones. And it was just, so it was, everybody that was in my kindergarten class was in my high school class.
Did that breed a sense of community that I wonder if maybe I missed out on?
Sort of. I mean, you certainly.
Or boredom.
No, it wasn't boring because there were in.
I turned it off. We all saw me turn it off. It's the thing is off. Look at that.
That's
so weird. I don't know what to say, guys.
But it's all right. It was a pleasant ting.
Evidently, I did not turn my phone off at all. That was Sandra Doherty, a previous guest on the podcast. I can't account for this other than that there's something supernatural happening because it's you. Please continue. I apologize for that. Nothing if not unprofessional, I say that.
Racist. No, wasn't boring at all. It was a big enough group that you saw. There were new people to get to know all the time. Okay. And
what about boys or girl? Listen, I don't know. I really know about you.
Oh yeah, everyone.
Everyone
thinks I'm a lesbian, but I
don't
like
think
the
you're
boys.
A lesbian. I just thought I'm scared to assume anyone is straight or gay because
I think that's very smart. And I really welcome the sort of current climate of sort of that fluid sexuality is absolutely welcomed. But no, it was boys and. Boys weren't interested in me. I was interested in the boys, but they weren't interested in me. So it was sort of, I think I had TV boyfriends.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so who would your TV boyfriends be?
Oh my goodness. I really liked Starsky on Starsky and Hutch.
Oh, I love it.
Oh my God, he's really, really cute. Oh. I liked...
Did you watch like the Dukes of Hazzard?
The Dukes of Hazzard, didn't care for either of those boys mm-hmm. though.
Didn't feel it.
Nope, didn't feel it. I tended to like sort of whatever the funny, insecure one was.
Did you watch The Monkees?
Loved The Monkees.
Who was your favorite monkey?
Davy and Peter, both.
Peter was mine.
Yeah. Very.
I think Davy would have been, but I was so annoyed that Davy was the obvious choice. I talked about this with Connie Chung I wanted to pick the one that I thought I had the most chance with.
Yeah,
somehow that was realistic.
No,
I
totally get that. Pick the one that's realistic. I always like what everyone seemed like a kid, like a fellow kid.
Yeah.
So the Smothers Brothers. I like Tommy Smothers.
Tommy. Oh, the Smothers Brothers are so brilliant.
Yeah.
Did you have an awareness of Nichols and May?
I think my awareness of Nichols and May was much later. I saw them on shows, guest starring on shows when I was little, and it was just sort of like, oh, it was them. And it was sort of the same way Stiller and Mira, mm-hmm. like there were those comedy teams at the time. But I think I got them all mixed up in my head. They weren't distinct entities yet.
Yeah. So what kind of books did you like reading? By the way, I realized that it was light when you got here, and it's going to gradually get more and more dark and creepy till we're sitting in complete darkness. And I may or may not turn on the lights. I'm not sure, but this will be a first.
You should actually, that is a good idea of podcasting in the dark. Like I could imagine a podcast that's entirely about you welcome a guest into a pitch black room.
Oh, you're so
right. And
you
do this like intimate podcast where everyone speaks very softly and it's very dark and it could be totally atmospheric.
Oh my God. Someone is going to steal this idea, but I can't start a second podcast, so I guess you're welcome, world.
Right.
From Jane. Books. What I know that's a hard question to ask because it sounds like you probably devour tons of stuff, but I can shout out Bradbury and Vonnegut pretty quickly and go, yes, I was obsessed with like needing to read all of their books, even though I wasn't like a huge Arthur C. Clarke or you know what I'm saying? There wasn't necessarily like tendrils that went out into the periphery from like the home base of loving those authors.
Yeah. Sometimes it sort of fractures out and sometimes it doesn't. I loved some sort of standard kid, girl, teen fare like Nancy Drew. I had all the Nancy Drews.
You got to do it.
Yeah, devoured that. And a lot of, like, my dad would bring home books from the library for him to read, and then I would take him after he's done with it. So a lot of murder mysteries.
Okay, so he was a murder mystery fan.
Yeah.
Interesting. I guess that because the Columbo and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly,
too.
Sort of police detective kinds of stuff. And I found Agatha Christie on my own and read tons and tons of Agatha Christie. Loved that. Margaret and I would trade books back and forth, and we both loved sort of... adventure fantasy books. So we read the Narnia books,
mm-hmm.
Read the Hobbit.
Did you get into Madeline L'Engle or was that?
Yeah. Read Madeline L'Engle.
I think Wrinkle in Time might be my favorite book of all time.
Read all those sort of that variety of sort of paranormal, paranormal sounds like the wrong word. That sounds like ghosts. But right. Sci-fi,
but the
fantasy
supernaturally
stuff.
Yeah, kind of stuff. Exactly. And yeah, I was so fixated on that too. I desperately wanted to have psychic powers. Did you?
Oh, sure. Of course. Psychic powers or invisibility or all those. Yeah. There was one, I don't have no idea who wrote it, but it was called, it was one of those long, you know how YA or teen books sometimes have those really long titles, like the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil Lee Frankweiler, which
another
I loved.
Huge hit of a book. We talked about it on the podcast before.
Oh my God.
That whole anything that involves the sort of cross genre, because it can happen in a bunch of different styles of books, but of like children going it alone in some sort of unusual environment is so exciting to me. So exciting.
And there was Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nam, another really long title. And it was one called the Junior High School Lemon. It was like the Lemon Fresh and Junior High School Witch or something, but it was a longer title. Like I'm missing some of the words.
Yeah.
And it was like a lot of those sort of, and one that was called something like Don't Fly in the House or something, like a lot of books about sort of,
got to be a witch,
little girls that discover they've got witch powers.
Yeah.
Love those sorts
which
of things.
Which is perennial, right? I mean, that's still something that's constantly being reinvented and down the line. But, oh, did you ever read Zilpha Keatley Snyder? Her books?
Yes.
They are so right up your alley. The
that
Egypt
name
game
sounds really familiar.
Is like the little kids who become obsessed with, they build this like Egyptian pharaoh worshiping, like they be, and then there's one that was like one of my the Changeling. They're very interesting because they're sort of knocking at the door of supernatural, but they're not. It's good because it's like nothing supernatural happens, but that's why it makes you feel more like it's your own life, because it feels like it's around the bend at any moment.
We didn't like those books. We would check, Margaret and I would check those out of the library, and we would start to read, and we'd go like, nothing is happening. I'm on page 8, and nothing has happened.
Oh, interesting.
So we never could
you
get
needed
into
to
them.
Have the kind of
slow. We needed a good start.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So. Would you guys play, I mean, is this your girlfriend from when you were really little? You said you guys were friends?
Yeah, my best friend growing up.
Would you play act and stuff too? Like, would you disappear off into a field
She had
pretend?
A big backyard that we called the meadow or something. It was a huge, huge, huge backyard that just sort of went back forever, like into the woods. And there was a lot of sort of like, build an elf house. Like, and we can make tiny chandeliers out of the acorn caps and try to make moss grow on the rocks so they look like little sofas and things. There was that sort of play.
If you told me I had to do that for a week right now, I'd be like, let's go.
Yeah, it was really fun. And then we added two more girls to our clique in junior high and high school. And we worked together on a history day project where we built a dollhouse and sort of designed it and furnished it and everything to look like Margaret's mother's house from being living in Holland during World War II, and the sort of like, here's where they had to bury their radio, and here's like, here are the blackout curtains for when the Germans would fly overhead. And it was sort of it's a sort of World War II Dutch house. And we won, and we got to go to Washington, D.C. together.
I'm not surprised at all. I think that's such a cool idea.
So much fun.
Anything like that where you can take something that's basically a really fun thing to do for you and make it about science, or make it about a school, it's a win.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's sort of learning at a really young age that you can sort of do what you love and get away with it if you can fold it into the construct of like a job or school or whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you have pictures of that the house that you guys made?
No, I don't. It just wasn't an era where you automatically took pictures of things. That would have been like,
you didn't laminate entire house.
Yeah, no,
you don't have it laminated.
Don't have
in
it. But we got to go to Washington D.C. in a van. It was
so
amazing.
What did you, did it then, like, what was the context in which, like, what was the fair? I mean, what was the...
Yeah, it was the National History Day.
National History Day. Yeah. And then did it go, it won, and then it competed in D.C.?
Yeah.
Against what else?
Against the top two from high schools all over the country got to go to Washington, D.C. and set it up. Like, it was like, you know, like a science fair only for these history projects that elucidated history. And I don't think we had to give a little talk with it. I think we just present it like, here's our object.
Yeah, the same you would as a science fair,
and we didn't win, but who cared at that point?
That's,
we got to travel in a van with like every other high school student. I mean, there were only probably 12 people from Iowa that went. And so like our history teacher drove the van, and we just all got in this van and we're all driven to D.C. and stayed in hotels.
Wait, how far away is D.C. from Iowa?
It was a several day trip.
Yeah,
we stayed over in hotels. It was amazing.
Look at you, Americana.
It was really cool. And they took us, like, we got lost and they were driving us on back roads. We drove through like Appalachia and yeah, it was really, really neat.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Appalachia reminds me of Barbara Kingsolver, who is an author that I greatly admire.
I have her on my list of people I haven't read yet, but that I want to read.
I think you'll like her.
Yeah, it takes a lot longer for me to get around to books than it used to.
I bet it does. Yeah. There were two things that I was going to say. Number one was, yes, you wanted to have those powers, but can we agree that wishing for invisibility is a lot less likely than focusing and being able to develop something like telepathy or telekinesis? Like, I worked actively on trying to become telepathic. Like, I really wanted to be able to have, you know, cards held up across from me and to be able to tell what they were. It was super important to me.
Yes. I engaged in similar things of like, and maybe I've got superpowers that I never knew about, or like I can read someone's mind or I can anticipate the card, but it was, you know, a little experimentation quickly shows that you don't have it.
No, I think we could still make this happen. I'm going to think of a number between 1 and 70. Hold on, I'm thinking what it is. Okay, I've got it.
14.
It was 56.
Yes, see? No. I don't got it. Nobody's got it. Man. Like they've tested all over the place and like nobody has that power.
Have they really?
Yeah.
What about all those? So everything that says, no, there actually have been studies is all just malarkey.
Yeah, no, you look at any one of those studies. There's actually a reward out there. It's like $1 million if anybody can actually prove verifiably the replicatable way under observation that they have some ability like that. Nobody has won the money.
And you are working now in a field, if we could say that, where you actually do that kind of, I would imagine, or at least at one time you did. You're doing research. I mean, you're doing research online. You're finding out what.
Not really.
Really? Because with that kind of storytelling, it seems like someone would be surfing the web and be like, oh, I just read about this guy who supposedly could lift this thing with his mind. I don't know.
The thing is that like people would ask like when I was writing on Buffy, like, oh, you must like study demonology. And where did you find these demons?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't find the demons. We made the demons up.
Okay.
You sort of learn what traditional vampire lore has been, but that's just out of the brain of another author.
Yeah.
So you can adapt it as you wish. But mostly we were sort of going like, well, we need a demon that does this exact thing.
Got it.
A lot better to
make
one.
Well, that makes sense.
Up. Yeah.
I think I'm confusing it with, I don't know, because in iconic kind of supernatural and fantasy television, there is a lot of like, oh, this is their take on the blank episode. Like, this is their take. And I think a lot of shows, definitely since Buffy, sort of, I can draw parallel lines specific to Buffy episodes where I'm like, oh, this is this show's version of the musical episode of Buffy, or this is this show's version of, you know, everyone turns into their Halloween costume kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, and definitely there are episodes, particularly the first two seasons of Buffy where, and I wasn't there yet, where it was sort of like, here is, you know, like, oh, they found a really cool German demon that does this thing and we'll do an episode of it. And a show like X-Files would do a lot of that. I mean, you'd totally
It's like you really want to be able to call up stuff.
Chupacabra, and you'd go research what a Chupacabra Cobras do, but you'd still be like picking and choosing the bits that fit your story. But yeah, no, that actually, and I love that kind of reading. I love those myths and stuff, and I write about I could totally imagine like pitching and selling a show about a teenager who discovers they have psychic powers. I just don't believe it in real life, but it's great for fiction. It's wonderful for fiction.
Oh, we'll get there. I really don't feel that way. Sorry that I had to, while you were talking, put this Sting Ease Max 2 on my arm, but when I was riding my bike in Griffith Park this morning, I got stung by a yellow jacket.
Oh, no.
Can you see it?
Yes, I can. I sure can. It's
kind of grim.
Yeah.
You're gonna
go into some sort of anaphylactic shock and fall down? I'm gonna have to carry you to emergency room.
I think if that happens 12 hours in, then maybe I deserve what I get. It's so unusual. It's not a comfortable feeling. I'll be honest with you. Have you been stung by?
Not since I was a kid. I was stung by a wasp on the top of my head when I was a little kid, and I still shudder to think of it. It was terrible.
It's kind of grim. I somehow managed to escape being stung by anything really until maybe 10 years ago when I was finally stung by a bee.
You don't know until you get stung by one if you're going to drop.
I know dead. That yeah. was, and so I had a real fear of bees for that reason because right. I had been told that my whole life.
Right.
So I, every time a bee was around, I was that, and I don't consider myself, I don't expect myself to be the person who's like,
right.
But I kind of was when right. they fly around. I just didn't know what to expect. So it was a little bit of a relief when I finally got stung yep. to find out that yes, I got a little nauseous. It did not feel good.
Right.
And then I turned all, these guys know, but I turned all my attention to my sadness about the bee dying. Like, oh, this isn't cool. No one wins in this situation. Well, what a shame.
I mean, the other bees that then got protected from you stomping on their, blundering into their territory or something or whatever, whatever that bee killed you.
That bee was in my car.
Oh. Yeah, it was
in
no
an enclosed
win.
Car. Yeah. Yeah, it was no threat whatsoever. It yeah. gave its life to protect nothing.
It's true, and endangered other drivers as well.
Indeed. Well, luckily the car was stopped. Luckily, I was getting into my car, closed the door, and was stung.
Mm-hmm. Sounds awesome.
It was really awesome. It was really awesome. Let's go back to boys for a second.
Uh-huh.
So when you say the boys weren't interested in you, how did you, how peaceful were you about that? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I always sort of had a theory that I was going to blossom into a great beauty, and I was just waiting for it to happen. Probably as a result of far too much television of the sorts we're talking about, where it was sort of like someone will come along and they'll take my glasses off and my hair will, and I will be beautiful. Also, I was fooled into by after-school specials and well-intentioned books into thinking like, I don't have to doll myself up. I don't have to learn how to put on makeup or do my hair nicely because the right boy will like me for me. And that had that was so well intentioned. The
lovely,
specials
yeah, so
of,
lovely
of like the boy who doesn't see the ordinary girl working at his side who's his best friend. He wants to go up to the pretty girl, but ultimately he always notices the girl next to him. So it sort of had this message in my head, and also like the way boys would talk about girls was there was so much contempt for how long the time they took getting ready, the stupid makeup, that they do all these stupid things, they curl their hair, all this stuff, and I could hear the contempt in their voice. And they clearly didn't have that contempt for other boys. So I was like, I'm going to be one of the guys. And all the shows, all the products for little were the tomboy little girl, the Jodie Foster little girl,
the Tatum O'Neal little girl.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. The little girl who's kind of one of the guys, and that's the best thing ever, and she'll end up getting the boy.
Right.
So I decided that was going to be my path, that I was going to seduce these boys by not being
just
pretty.
Like Jodie Foster.
Just like Jodie.
Well,
Foster.
Let me tell you the first problem with that. Oh.
Yeah, and so I was like, well, I'm not going to be the frivolous girl that takes forever getting ready and cares about those things. I'm going to be the down to earth girl who's your best friend, and discovered that all of those shows lied.
Oh,
it was all
wow.
a big fat lie.
Yeah.
And that all the things that I never learned about like prettying myself up, it was like, well, a natural beauty, I will be a natural beauty and it will encompass me naturally. And then one day I'll wake up beautiful. And it didn't happen. And I never learned the artifice. And I look back now and I look at the pretty girls and I realize like 65% of that is effort, is plucking the hairs out and dyeing
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then the makeup 60, and play yeah, your assets.
Totally.
And I kept waiting for the natural beauty to encompass me because, again, all the books were like the girl who plucks her eyebrows doesn't get the boy because she's vain, whereas the girl with the big bushy eyebrows but the great personality does. It's not true. And so I picked up all the artifice way too late.
Hmm.
Like I was well into your aging process.
Well, when did you start getting a little attention and did you, can you be more specific about like, right. did you really have to make those decisions? Like, I'm going to have to transform myself before I...
No, I just sort of stayed me and got a boyfriend in college and had a great college boyfriend I was with for 7 years and loved him and it was really good. And
were you guys friends first?
Sort of. We lived in the same house. I lived in a house in college, a co-op at Berkeley,
mm-hmm.
that was 27 people, and everybody
classic.
In there slept with everybody. And
classic.
It was Berkeley. So I knew I'd been friendly with a few boys in the house, as one does, and then met the guy who I like was like, oh, we will be boyfriend girlfriend, and he loved me for me, and it ultimately did work out.
Yeah.
Then he left. We both finished school and he went to Sacramento and got a job and I came to LA and sort of was like just like working so hard on my career and sort of picking boys that I like, guys that would be a guy on the sitcom staff with me who I really liked, and I would sort of spend a year being intriguing and then realizing, no, he has no interest in me. I did that for a long time.
Spend a year being intriguing.
Yeah, I used to like go to the bookstore and just sort of like stand in the sci-fi aisle, like waiting for a boy in the sci-fi aisle to like ask me a question.
That's kind of wonderful.
I slipped a note to a boy at the mall once with my phone number on, like stuff like that. And it was just like nothing was happening because I wasn't like, I thought that just being intriguing was enough.
Yeah.
And then was set up with my current guy during Buffy and have been with him for a very long time.
Nice.
Yeah. And it was a real intellectual guy who was genuinely looking for sort of an intellectual pairing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the setup version of things, I suppose the really kind of de rigueur version of that is online dating as well. Like that you can sort of create a situation in which you're being set up by mutual right. friends that neither Absolutely. Of you knows somehow. It's like the anonymous best mm-hmm. friend is setting you up anonymously. But that really, I think, that goes a long way, right? Especially in an adult world where the alternative is like, you're just not going to, the amount of time it would take, the numbers game mm-hmm. of meeting someone that you really have a connection with randomly is so difficult.
Yeah, and I tried online dating too and just didn't meet any, you know, it would be sort of you put your thing out there and there's all these thousands of people who are also on Match.com or whatever. And I would literally get like three options. Like, okay, so there's three guys in this whole system who've matched up with me and one is 60 and one, you know, and you go, okay.
Well, and then I have friends who have the reverse who go on and have, frankly, more than they can weed through. And mm-hmm. in the end, they'll still be lucky to end up with three people are maybe worth, you know, really having an extended conversation with. And then on top of that, the sort of hope that there would be some sort of chemistry, whatever that spark feels like. It doesn't have to be that you open the door and you know you'd want to have sex with that person instantly. Right. That's not really how it works for most women anyway. But that there would be something that kind of pulls you past friendship is such a crapshoot.
But the nice thing was that I just like when I was a kid, I was perfectly happy being alone. Like it was something, it'd be fun if I was watching this with somebody, but don't really need to.
Yeah.
And your parents stayed
together
friends.
Your whole...
Parents have been together my whole life.
That's a nice model.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're very happy together and very companionable, but also very able to do things independently. And I've just sort of... Generally, I'm just as happy doing stuff on my own as with a group of people or with someone. Like, I don't know. I think I entertain myself the way I always have. I'm writing stories in my head.
Yeah. When you were in high school, did you have other extracurricular activities that you found yourself sucked into? Did you do any drama? Did you do band? Did you do yearbook? Any stuff like that?
I was briefly in band before I sort of realized, like, I kind of am getting nothing out of this. I'm tone deaf. I haven't learned this finger. I don't care to practice.
What did you play?
French horn. Because it was it looked like the most unusual instrument, but that I could still lift. Like, it was like, I didn't want to just be one of the clarinet girls.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to have something unusual. So, the French horn.
I had no sense of, like, I started playing guitar when I was in fifth grade. Classical guitar just as like an extended mm-hmm. day latchkey kid sort mm-hmm. of class option mm-hmm. so that I would be home finally after my parents instead of before. And so I never had that like organized band or orchestra situation. You would never have done that?
I would never have done anything that would keep me there at school after the buses
or
anything.
I had a choice. I mean, there was a second round of buses. I am going to finally turn on the light because I will have to write something down in a second.
I wanted to be home when there was TV to be watched. And like there were reruns of Hogan's Heroes and such in the afternoon that I needed to be home for. And it was before DVR, there wasn't, or even VCRs, there was no way to tape anything. You had to be home to see it.
The thing that I like about talking with someone, it's so funny. It's like the same, and guys, I'm sure you've heard me smother like three burps, but I've tried to be really subtle about it until I just outed myself in the least subtle way possible. But I could be having the same conversation with someone else about them being essentially obsessed with television as a young person, and the outcome would be so much more. It would have like such a sad tint to it. Were they like completely unsuccessful, lonely, and right, had lived this and lived in television as an escape, and sort of, you know, now are like a file clerk somewhere, feeling their dreams are unrealized. But what a success story to be able to say. But look, it led you right to this tremendous success you've had.
I think people. Yeah, people say, oh, my kids watch too much TV. And it's like, for what? For a TV writer? No, I bet they don't even watch enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, watch as much as you can. It's very good for you if it's the career you're headed toward.
Yeah.
So I always think, keep in mind that there are many very wonderful and rewarding careers that will be rewarded by that instinct you get for jokes, for story, for character that you get from watching a lot of TV at a young age. It all goes in so easily when you're young and permeable.
Right.
And I still feel like there's, and you remember so much. I mean, I have a terrible memory, but I remember jokes from episodes of Welcome Back, Kotter that I saw once when I was 12, you know, and on MASH or whatever. And like that stuff goes in and it stays, and you end up pulling them out and going like, this joke structure is what I need in this moment.
Yeah.
There was an episode of Welcome Back, Kotter where, one of the characters, probably Barbarino, said, I've been here so long, I know this place like the back of my hand. He looks at the back of his hand. What the hell is that?
Oh, there you go.
Love that joke. Yeah. It's a flip joke in one line. It's a lovely little joke. And I've heard it on other shows since. But
yeah,
that's a winner. And it doesn't, that joke isn't just those words. You can tell that same joke about using that same structure, freshening it up, making it new, and use it now. That's still a good joke.
Absolutely. And two, just the way characters exist, like the just the sort of way you know you want to have this kind of sympathetic character. I've just been watching, I finally got into Fringe. I hadn't watched it at all, and a friend of mine said, you know, I really think you would like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it, and there's stuff about it that I don't respond to, and there's stuff about it that I do, but I think time and time again, people do get into the sort of the big bad arc, right? And then when you have it's interesting to see episodic television, some of it bending the way of BBC shows or cable shows where you only, HBO shows where you only have 13 episodes and you just kind of you just tell that one story,
right,
opposed to having the responsibility of telling all of these one-offs. Because it seems so often that, I don't know, it just feels like there's, and by the way, I'm not a television writer, so what do I know? But the idea of having the responsibility to retell those little bits and pieces when so much of what keeps the fans coming back is like these arcs that have so much to do with love stories or, you know, redemption, and they want to see those things play out. And what I was going to say about Fringe is that I don't really respond to that much of the show, considering that I like supernatural shows, but the actor who plays Walter, who is the sort of kooky inventor scientist guy, is so human and so compelling and so tender and sweet and just messed up, and that I'm coming back for him. You know, I have that. I feel that real human attachment to the way that he's written, and it's so cool to see in the arc of a series the way, I don't usually talk about showbiz that much, I guess I'm totally fan nerding out on you, but to start to feel like you can tell when people like writing for a character, I guess that's what I'm saying, is you can start to see the evolution of that, and that character starts to write itself in a way, and how cool that is.
Yeah, some characters will definitely absolutely take off and just sort of have such a clear voice right from the beginning, and often it's a pairing with a particular actor. I talk a lot about Anya on Buffy, which Emma Caulfield did such a beautiful job.
So great.
So easy to write for. It's so easy to write for a character that's blunt and direct, like you know exactly how Anya talks.
Yeah.
And Anya talks a little like me, and that made that really fun and easy to write. I think you're talking about two different interesting things about structure too, which is you talked about that TV shows are now much more arc driven, but that they are also shorter arcs.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do an arc that takes five seasons to resolve, but that's sure helps if you've got, say, Game of Thrones in front of you and you've got an entire novel so that you know you have a 100-episode story or whatever it
sure.
is that will lay out perfectly. It's very hard to have five seasons of arcs all figured out in front of you.
Yeah.
So that we're heading into what you're talking about, where you go like, well, this season is one story, next season is one story. Once Upon a Time does that essentially. So season one was sort of the breaking of the curse, and season three we're starting in Neverland. So we're sort of telling much more like this is a season-long arc. Buffy did a little of that, but wasn't sort of fully fledged the way it is now, where they really are these contained, like the way American Horror Story sort of
we told really, that story, really we separate. Put it away,
yeah,
and, yeah.
Very, very interesting. It's an interesting phenomenon. I think TV is definitely being influenced by cable, but also by the fact that people will buy it on DVD and binge watch it. And so,
absolutely. I think it forces a higher quality in a sense.
It certainly forces a different kind of storytelling where you're more like, we always knew we were writing chapters in a novel, but now the novel feels much more like a novel. Like it's just truer and truer. And most people who watch your show won't watch it when it's first broadcast, but they'll watch it years later. Mm-hmm. And you want to make a classic that will live on people's shelves and that will work as a whole entity. And it's really become quite a different task.
Yeah.
And it really makes like TV writing used to be much more done by freelancers back in the day. So if you watch Bonanza or something,
they're like Twilight Zone, I would imagine, or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So an anthology show, absolutely. But even a show like Bonanza would, or Gunsmoke or whatever, or probably Cannon and Mannix and Columbo, those things. A freelancer would come in, go to the showrunner with their story and pitch it out. And the showrunner would say, okay, we're going to buy that one, write that one. Star Trek worked that way when I used to pitch Star Trek Next Generation. So it was a ton of freelancers would come in and we'd all pitch. And you would be, okay, that's an episode, go write an outline. And nobody does that anymore. And you sort of see, we were already started on this evolutionary path away from this is a book of short stories to this is chapters in a novel.
Yeah.
And it's so much more important now that the whole staff works together as a unit because you're essentially going to be group writing a novel.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can't even imagine that. I think that I'm so wowed by the whole idea of that process. And either there are some shows where people, it's a group effort, but it's still a little more pocketed and removed. And then there are shows where people are really just like Big Brother style, like forced to be in a room together and try to crank stuff out a lot of the time. And oh, wow. I find that, I mean, as an only child, do you feel like, is there a way that you like to work that feels like, or do you feel yourself drawn to be social in that context because it's maybe different from how you grew up, or is there a part of you that loves to sort of lone wolf it and like disappear and sort of make your thing and then come
both.
Back?
Both. I love being in the room. I don't feel that the room is where I exhibit my best skills. I don't have a great memory. It's hard for me to sort of keep track of story, and structure's never really been my best thing. So I don't always feel that I'm pulling my weight in the room, but I love the like sitting around with a group of really fun, cool people. I love that. But I love also that part of my job is a couple times a year I get to go off on my own, stay at home for a week, and write and bring back a thing. Because that's as much as I love being in the room, that's my actual favorite thing. Is like, oh my god, I get to write this great scene today. Oh, I love this scene. I get to bring it in and sort of drop the dead mouse on my master's doorstep and say like, look what I brought you.
Yeah,
I love that.
Oh,
love
that's
writing.
A good way of expressing it. And when you were in high school too, did you have, I know you were obviously really into pop culture on the TV side. Were you a big music fan? Did you listen to a lot of music?
No, I've never been a music fan. I don't tend to listen to music. I don't know anything about popular music. I'm sort of, like I say, I'm sort of tone deaf.
What do you listen? What when you're driving, when you know you're going to be in the car for an hour in Los Angeles, how do you use that time?
Audiobooks. I love, love audiobooks. You can just download them onto your iPhone.
Love them too. I'm listening to one now.
Love it.
I mean, not right now. That'd be really rude. I've got a bug in my ear. I'm listening to it right now. I haven't heard a word you said, Jane.
No, I love listening to audiobooks. And that's how I do my reading these days.
Yeah.
Also, particularly when you get older and your eyes are a little funkier. And it's like, oh, I kind of read best now if I can cover one eye. Well, how do you do audiobook?
Agreed. And are you more drawn to, or is it equal interest in fiction or nonfiction.
I alternate. I'll listen mm-hmm. to a novel, then I'll listen to a biography or something.
Can you shout out a recent nonfiction and a recent fiction that you liked? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, no. Maybe I'll just open my phone.
Nothing wrong with
myself.
That. Nothing wrong with that.
To a biography of Mary Queen of Scots lately.
Ooh, that's got to be great.
That was pretty cool. I've got Alice in Wonderland and Alice's Adventures in Alice.
I'd like to revisit Through the Looking Oz Glass books. And the,
I love the
those
Oz
books. Those Oz books are so good.
Those.
Me
Ozma
too.
Of Oz, all those later ones.
Oh
I
my gosh!
Them.
To spinning it out. Did you ever read? This was a movie, that, a very popular movie, but I read the book and just loved the two. I think there were two books, or maybe it's just one book, but it encompassed what they made of the two movies, which was The Neverending Story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Did you ever watch Neverending Story?
That movie was whatever it was. I mean, uh-huh. it has a place, and you know, for my generation, it was a big deal. But the actual book, which was translated, I think, from German, was far the same way the Oz books are, like lush and textured in a way you could never get in a movie. And
somebody
I wish more people
that,
read it.
Like the movie is actually like the first chapter of the book or something. The
yeah,
book was so much
yeah.
past that. Yeah, I don't really know that world, but I should. I'm always looking for more books.
It's 20. I'll just tell you real quick, and then I want to hear your audiobooks. But it's 26 chapters, and each chapter begins with a letter of the alphabet, uh-huh. and each page is an illustration that's an illuminated letter, and it's this beautiful, intricate, hand-drawn illustration of what happens in that chapter. And it's just
that's
that kind
cool.
of, and each chapter starts like A starts with, you know, another day had passed,
right,
and
right.
B, so you're so interested to see like how are they going to start X, like what's that going to be? Quite lovely.
That's cool. All those illustrations will be lost on me in the audiobook.
That's very true.
But I listened to this book recently called, there were two books, Bring Up the Bodies, and the first one is called Wolf Hall by Hilary Mantel, and they won the Booker Prize, and they're amazing fictionalized accounts of Thomas Cromwell and Anne Boleyn and Henry VIII.
Oh, yeah.
So good. Totally recommend.
Okay, cool.
And I also want to recommend a nonfiction, Bob Harris's book, First Bank of Bob, that's about a bunch of loans that he made through Kiva to people in the developing world. Then he went to the developing world and met the people who got the loans and saw how they used them to change their life. It's totally it's like
really
Eat, Pray,
good.
Love, but with money.
But listen, you've all been wanting Eat, Pray, Love, but with money.
Yeah.
Now you have it with Bank of Bob.
First Bank of Bob.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm getting into game portion, Jane. I'm going to start with this cootie catcher, aka fortune teller.
Right.
I don't know if you ever did these when you were younger.
Yeah, the other little girls did them, but I thought those little girls were frivolous.
Well, guess what? You get super frivolous.
Secretly, I always wanted to do them, but I never knew how they worked.
Well, okay, so there will be a question at the end of this, whichever one you end up picking. There will be a question for you to answer that I'm going to call her an associate producer. Listeners and friends of the show, Victoria makes these. So pick a color.
Red.
R-E-D. Pick a number.
3.
1, 2, 3. Another number.
2.
1, 2. And one more number.
1.
1. She stayed low, guys. She stayed low. How old were you when you went on your first date? Sort of answered that, but not quite.
I was 17.
Okay.
I would say. There was a boy who was a year younger than me. I was a senior in high school and he was a junior. And he asked me to the prom. But the prom was still, you know, like you ask someone to the prom, like you give them time to get ready. So it was probably like 6 weeks out or something. So then we went on a few dates in between. And the first thing he took me to see a movie, and it was Kentucky Fried Movie.
Which that's awesome.
If anybody knows that movie, it's got...
That's so uncomfortable.
It was so
uncomfortable.
Oh my God.
Oh my
People
God.
People were getting up and leaving.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It was really quite an adventure.
My version of that is that when I was in college, a boy that I liked asked me over to his house to watch a movie, and we watched heavy metal.
Oh,
same thing.
God.
So awkward.
So embarrassing.
Oh
Everything
my
was
God.
So embarrassing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So now I'm going to play this quick game of MASH. I won't make it too long. I'm disappointed because I was excited that I thought I finally found a pen that worked with this very special paper off this pad that someone made me. But I know I can make it work here. Okay, so have you ever done this before?
No.
So this M-A-S-H, this is mansion, apartment, shack, and house. I played this a lot when I was a youngster with my friends. The idea is that I create the categories, and then I give you three options for each category, and then I do this process of elimination to foretell your new future.
Oh, all right.
When we were young, it was as simple as like three cars you'd like to drive.
Okay.
Three types of dogs that you'd like to have as a pet. So I like to think a little bit outside that box, but I like to stay true to it in some ways as well. But for the first category, I'm going to start with three worlds of fiction that it would be fun to be able to visit.
Oh, wow. Jane Austen world.
Love it.
Worlds of fiction. Oh, this is so interesting. There are lots of really famous ones that I don't want to visit. So I got to think of a good one. I want to land where people, not everybody's all unhappy. You know, you're like, oh, the world of Buffy. Oh, so many people are miserable there. If you actually have to live angst. There, so much angst. Oh, you know what? Friends, the fictional world in which Friends is set.
Love it.
I love that. Let's say, what's a good sci-fi, but a fun sci-fi. Yeah,
don't
sci-fi.
Say Battlestar.
Oof. Yeah, no, that's a Battlestar is rough. Blow. I want like a sci-fi thing where people have superpowers, but they're happy and fun and having fun
adventures.
Yeah,
there's gotta be something like that. Come on. Fun adventure, sci-fi. Every listener right now is like, say this, say
know,
this. It's
know,
so frustrating
just,
to listen to podcasts after the fact. I mean, a lot of the Avengers world seems like people, like they're good at creating people who still know how to have a good time.
Let's put Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Great. Why not? Shout out to Joss.
Like,
shout
not the superheroes,
out.
But the, well, anyway.
Yeah. I think that's great.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah.
How about three TV characters you sort of wish that you'd thought up?
Oh, that's great. Oh my God. I think there is Felix Unger.
Great.
From The Odd Couple. Yep. Which, I mean, he obviously that was from a play first, and then a movie, and then TV. Mm-hmm. But let's say Felix Unger. Seth Cohen on The OC. So now both of those the abbreviations are OC.
Yeah, this is confusing.
See if I can find
I've never
a third
seen
one.
The OC.
Oh.
Who plays Seth Cohen?
I'm blanking on the name, but he's
great.
Really, really good.
Look it
it's
up.
A great yeah. character. Very charming. I don't think he wasn't going to be the lead character, and then he was just so charming.
Oh, I love when you can see when you find out about that stuff too. Like he just unlocked it for himself, like as a charismatic person.
And with these characters, I want to.
You
kind of
wish you'd created.
Have you seen Husbands? Have you seen Husbands?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh my God! Well, Cheeks is a character that.
Well, I'm on board for the name 100%.
Yeah, Cheeks is the lead character in that, and he existed before we created the show because my writing partner and the guy who runs that show, Brad Bell, had created the character of Cheeks. That he used in his YouTube videos.
Okay.
And it's just this.
Oh, cool.
Great
I'm very excited
so
to check
fun
this
to
out.
Write for. Yeah.
Very excited. Okay, cool. All right. How about we didn't get into this at all. So I'm going to use this as a way in. And if you feel flat about it, then this will reveal that. But what about three foods that you could eat as much as you wanted of without any negative ramifications, whatever that means, whether it's the sugar come down or the fried food fatigue or gaining weight or whatever, anything like that?
Oh my God. I eat all the foods in the world and I've never discovered any negative ramifications from any of them.
Love it.
So it's just like, what do I want to eat
so
the
these
most
are, yeah, of? these are just your favorite foods that you can have whenever you want them.
God, I love everything though. How do I pick? Okay.
Maybe there's something that's like, there's a taco that you can only get in New York and I'm never there anymore.
Put down filet mignon because that's always good.
Great.
Let's have some. There's these crazy molecular cuisine things that are so like they're I know what it is. these things that are little, like little balloons of olive juice. And through some special process, they've encapsulated them, and you can put them in your mouth, and they burst, and you've got like a mouthful of olive juice. They're so awesome. So put down like modern olives. I think they're amazing.
Modern olives?
Yeah,
I'm fascinated.
Yeah, they're incredible, and you can never. I feel like I've never had enough of them. And put down some Persian ice cream.
Persian. Oh, what makes Persian ice cream special?
Oh, they've got crazy flavors like roses or and seeds.
I guess there's the place on Mashti Malone. Yeah. I guess I didn't realize that was Persian. I don't know why I thought it was just Indian.
No, it's
interesting.
Persian. So good.
Mashti Malone. Good call. Really good choices. Very different from one another. How about three places that you could have a second home anywhere in the world?
Oh, my goodness. Hawaii. Mm. Sydney, Australia, and Iceland, Reykjavik, Iceland.
I haven't been yet.
It's great. Go to Iceland.
Boy, I really feel like I know. I want to know how to spell it, and I don't.
Oh, Reykjavik. Yeah,
basically created a smear.
Yeah, I don't think
that kind of represents Reykjavik. How about I just had something. Three real people who are no longer alive. This is a little bit of the, if you could have someone at your dinner party, but three people who are no longer alive that you would like to be able to spend an hour talking with.
Oh my goodness. Well, let's put, Lee Harvey Oswald down there, because I got some questions for him.
I bet you do.
And he would know whether he did it or not. Or, you know,
he would. God, I hope he would.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a... Well, yeah, of course, he, you know, well, I fired the bullet. I didn't think it got close to the car, but apparently it did. Well, that doesn't tell any mystery. Yeah, like...
So what? Close!
I want people about whom there was mystery around their death, because then you could find out more.
How are you feeling about the Marilyn and Elvis sort of
stuff?
Oh,
yeah. Nah, Elvis, there's no mystery. He had an impacted bowel and a heart, and his heart gave out. Like, I don't feel.
And he's not really dead.
I think he's pretty sure he's dead. Mm-hmm. Andy Kaufman.
Nice.
That's someone I would be very interested in meeting and talking with.
Understood.
And I'll put down Lucille Ball, because... Brad is a huge fan of hers, and I think he would give me a good list of questions of things he'd like to ask, and then I could relay back the answers.
That's all very giving of you. Okay. Three modes of transport that are not driving in a car that you would enjoy doing, like, to get to places.
Segway.
Love it.
Love the Segway. Conveyor belt. I want them to develop a system of conveyor belts to replace sidewalks, so I don't have to walk so much.
I think that every time I'm at the airport, I'm like, there is something so satisfying. I still like walking, but on that belt, I feel like a superhero. Very simple, super walking hero.
Again, all you need, then you just need a series of ones that go faster.
Agreed.
And then you can go until you're going 100 miles per hour.
Every time I'm at the airport, I think, it almost seems like we should have this, like in the future, like in the 50s.
Yeah. And ice skating, please.
Love it. Yep. And I'm not good at it. But
I went sky skating today. I love ice skating.
What about three hobbies or sports that you wish that you just had a natural talent for?
Let's say about figure skating, because nobody said I couldn't duplicate it.
There you go.
I wish I was great at that. I would love to be able to like do flips like a gymnast, but gymnastics. Mm-hmm. And... I wish I had a head for chess. When I was a kid, I played chess with my dad, and I got so I could sort of see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had instincts, and I could sort of see the big flow of the game. And I have tried since, and I can't get back there. It's like it's slipped away from me, and I don't have the facile kid brain anymore to sort of see it. All I see is like. I guess I could come up with a list of possible plays that would be possible from this position, but I'm not seeing
it. It's more dry somehow. Yeah. It's like more dry. I completely relate to that 100%.
Yeah.
What about, I wanted to get really abstract, but it's kind of a weird, it's like a weird thing formed when you just said that, which was something about if you could create three new games somehow based on something, like a game that would be based on figure skating, or a game that would be, whether it's a board game or like something on, that on you played on a computer, or even like something, even like a ride, like it would turn into a ride at Disneyland or something right. like that.
Well, I definitely think there should be Once Upon a Time rides.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And at one point, we were working on, there was going to be a Battlestar Galactica roller coaster at like
Singapore. Oh, this is great.
Singapore.
Oh, so you can just pull from your own career for these answers. And this is genius.
And that was sounded so cool of like, you, like you would be designed so you're like a Cylon or you're a human fighting the Cylons. And the actual, I don't know if they ever built it, but the design that we heard about was going to be, there were two roller coasters that would twine together. And you would, and one was supposed to be, you were the humans, and when the other one, you were the Cylons. The Cylon one was one of those standing up ones, because, you know, the Cylons stood up on their ship.
Yeah.
And the human one would be a sitting down one, and it would be made to look like the individual ships, you know, that they rode, and it was, and they would, and you would see each other as you were going through, and you were supposed, you know, so sort of said it like you would be racing at the opposing forces. Yeah.
That's only
that
amazing.
Was really, really brilliant. I didn't
That makes
come
me wish I
that.
Designed roller coasters or rides.
Yeah, I love that.
Oh my gosh.
But and the most important thing, they did this some big study about like what makes people happy in the long term, like a decades long study. Mm-hmm. And it was turned out it was like love makes people happy and living a life in pursuit of love.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some sort of game where you get better at developing strategies for finding love, not
How
necessarily
dare
romantic
you be so
love,
well-spoken.
But finding the people. I mean, Joss has a theme that's all the way through Buffy that's about like your family is the people you find.
Yes.
And it's so true. And so some sort of game that's about making connections with people.
I love it.
And I suppose it's probably more of an app than anything. I think I've just invented
OkCupid. What is an app
Cupid.
If not a game?
Yeah.
This is brilliant. Okay, so this is the last piece of it, which is that I just ask you to simply tell me when to stop.
Oh, stop.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay, I'm going to pause this, do a quick process of eeny, meeny, miny, mo, and I will reveal your future.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready to meet your future?
Oh my goodness.
I don't use that voice. Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure. I'm going to give you a copy of our home game. Wait, this is the home game. Okay. I'm going to start out by telling you that you, I forgot what this says. Oh boy. Oh, okay. So first of all, I want to congratulate you on your extremely flexible skill of gymnastics.
Oh my goodness.
I'm pleased that you're able to do a flip, a spin, a cartwheel, a
my goodness. Oh wow. Okay.
What do
I
you call it?
I don't know. Round off.
Round off. That's exactly what I was trying to remember. Round off whenever you like. However, one would think that, you know, you're so agile, you might just flip your way around town, but instead you choose to ice skate around town.
Oh my God.
So
I can
strap on those skates, because anywhere you need to be, you
can glide. And I can do flips on my ice skates.
And you can do flips. I mean, that's basically, you're basically, because you travel via ice skate, you also you are a figure skater.
Yeah, yeah.
You did. You got both. You totally cheated that and you got both. It was perfect.
Awesome.
You, whatever you like, you may step into the imaginary world of friends.
Oh, that would be fun.
So that'll be fun. Perhaps when you visit that world, you bring with you the gift of Persian ice cream.
Oh, that's,
you can all just sit around eating some delicious Persian ice cream. Really nice job creating the character of Cheeks.
Yay!
Really nice job there.
Sorry, Brad, I created Cheeks.
And when you are not hanging out at your house in Reykjavik.
Nice.
You are spending an hour grilling Lee Harvey Oswald. Thank God you chose that, because and that worked out, because I think a lot of people are going to be thrilled if you choose to reveal whatever it is that he shares with you.
Yeah.
And perhaps most importantly, you have created for the rest of us and for yourself to enjoy this game/app of loving
Finding
better.
Love, yay.
Isn't that wonderful?
I love that.
You did a really nice job. You've painted a beautiful picture of a future for yourself.
Yeah, I
Thank
like
you
this
so
future.
Much
and I'm
for
ice skating in Reykjavik.
I know.
And I'm ice skating in Iceland.
Perfect.
It's perfect.
Sometimes it happens like that where it's very serendipitous.
I'm ice skating in Iceland where I'm eating ice cream.
Oh, you like it chilly.
I don't.
It would make sense if that happened to me because I do love colder climbs. That's and I constantly crazy. Like going places like that. That is really weird. Ice cream, ice skating, and Iceland.
It must have just somehow gotten in my head when I was like searching for things. So. And I thought I was picking random things, but somehow I got ice in my brain.
It's the closest thing to psychic powers either one of us is ever going to see in our lifetime, except on the silver screen.
No, but it was just subconscious. It was just my actual psychological subconscious.
I'm impressed doing something.
Yeah,
our subconsciouses are amazing enough, right? We don't even need to have psychic powers. Just science in and of itself is pretty astonishing.
It's probably my brain telling me to like pick up ice on the way home.
If it's just that you need ice, please go get yourself a Mashti Malone's ice cream. It's not that far away.
True. Maybe I will.
Oh, thank you for coming over after work continuing your work day. I hope this was a pleasant enough experience that it didn't feel like you were just elongating work.
Not at all.
A pleasure having you. This will come out probably not this Thursday, but the following Thursday.
All right.
I'll send you a link and all that good stuff.
It's that means if you're listening to this on the following Thursday, this is another new episode of Husbands was released today, and you need to go to CWSeed.com. And watch the new episode of Husbands. Or just Google the word Husbands. And
that's what I'm doing
the link
second you leave so that I can watch it.
Yeah.
Because I'm very excited to check Cheeks out.
Yeah, the first episode is already up. So if you go to CWC.com or just Google Husbands, you will be able to watch the first 10-minute episode.
Great.
The next two Thursdays, we'll complete the arc.
I love it.
Then there's going to be another story after that. So check it out.
Guys, I can't wait.
From me and executive producer Brad Bell.
This is awesome. God, there's so much. Okay. And then also PS, like there's, if you haven't already figured this out, there's a wealth of stuff you can check out that Jane was responsible for. So, and I'm sure there will be in the future. That was super cheesy. That's how I like to end the podcast. Just like to really cheese it up at the end. But thanks again. And, we'll talk to you guys next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.